The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
If there's one voice that's familiar to people who have been listening to Bare Naked Ladies, it's Stephen Page. And I became a Bare Naked Ladies fan before I even knew what Bare Naked Ladies was. And people had been talking about it, singing the songs, but it didn't really catch on to me until I listened to a track on Stunt in the car. And I was hooked for life. After having listened to Moxie Frubis for years and years and years, and They Might Be Giants, it played into the same genre with a little more of a pop kind of edge that I really, really enjoy. And so now it's an absolute thrill for me to be standing next to you and having a chance to interview you, Stephen Page. You did a wonderful job tonight in Seattle, Easy Street Records.
See, if I had known, I would have played it in the car. I enjoy playing that one at these in-stores, actually. I've played it a few times.
What was the reason that the song was even written? Is there some amount of truth in it?
Well, I guess the truth is in the fact that you realize you start writing songs about your past or about people you've known, and you realize those pasts that you share with other people. So if I'm singing about myself, and you know I'm singing about a girlfriend who dumped me or a car accident or whatever else, somebody else is going to say, "Hey, that's me singing about." And so that's what it's about. It's about you reveal yourself, but really. It's okay. You can stand up and walk. Really, when you reveal yourself, you're also revealing somebody else, kind of without necessarily their permission, too. And it is kind of a strange encroachment on their privacy.
That was my connection to it, because it sounded like, how the hell did he know what happened? Because that's awfully familiar. Do you find that that's how a lot of people are attracted to the music that you write, that they feel a common bond with the stories that you tell without them even knowing that you're writing about something that may have happened in your personal life?
Well, I think that's what people strive for with any kind of art, is that when they say universality, they don't mean something that, hey, we've all felt this, and then you write a generic love song or you know what I mean when I say kind of song either. I think those ones are always lame, but when you just sing about, it doesn't have to be about yourself. You make it sound like it's about you. You create, like a fiction writer, when you read a book that you really like, it could take place in another country and someone who's 70 years old or whatever else, but you might share experiences with the more emotional experiences that you recognize. That's when they're successes. But you can never tell when people are going to share that same sense. You can only guess. You can only think, if it's true to me, and I think it creates a story that people are going to, that I'm going to feel good about or proud of, then hopefully somebody else attaches to it for the same reason.
It seems that most of the songs that you've written, at least the ones that I really have latched onto, are either about love lost or love gained. That's a strong theme in your life.
Yeah, a little more about love lost. I mean, I think the standard Stephen Page story arc includes. The stories are about mischances so often, or bad choices. You know, like it's about choosing, you know, choosing the safe thing instead of the interesting thing, and the safe thing, the blandness of life that can happen after that. And I mean, that can be everything from pinch me to to asleep at the wheel, to break your heart. Of course, is a classic one of those kinds of songs, and I do kind of keep going with that. These Wasted Words off this record is that kind of song.
It seems that this is your first solo effort, or at least effort away from Bare Naked Ladies itself, and you co-wrote it with an idol of yours, Stephen Duffy. How was that process? How well did it go?
It was great. I mean, we've been writing together since 1993, when we were writing songs for Maybe You Should Drive, and we became really good friends. And one of the things about writing, you know, when we were writing together, we would do demos of songs, and the process of recording demos was really fun, and I loved it because, to me, they sounded like the same reason I love listening to Stephen Duffy records. You know, his style of playing, his recording technique had a real influence on me. And to actually hear my voice singing over tracks that sounded like that and participating in that was amazing. So when I finally had the opportunity to actually make our own record like that, it was a huge thrill and pretty easy to do. He's an amazing musician. I mean, you know, I think because when I first was acquainted with him, I was he was a bit of a synth pop artist. I never really figured he was a great instrumentalist because it seems very program produced. But he's just he's got a great ease with everything from guitar to bass to keyboards. He knows what he's going to play, and he plays it the first or second take, and it's great.
You played a song of his in your set. Oh, is there a reason why you chose that song over all the others?
Well, that I played Entourage, which is a song that he and I wrote together, but it's the only one that he's recorded instead of me. So it's a song I really like, but it was on an album called Lilac 6 that he put out.
So The Vanity Project, why did you choose that name?
When we were recording it, I had the list of songs that we were recording on the wall, and I just put The Vanity Project at the top as kind of a joke. And it just kind of stuck. Like, I kept writing it on everything. And the more I thought about it, I thought the themes of the record are largely about vanity, the crap that happens to you because of your own vanity. And that could be, you know, by the roadside, the protagonist is so obsessed with his own existence and proving it his importance that he, you know, he lies about killing somebody. Or you have, you know, songs like SoCal, or songs like Hit and Run that are about, you know, vanity of cultures in a way, too. And it is, you know, doing a record on your own, stepping outside of your own thing is a bit of a they call them vanity projects. And, you know, I think it's a cynical way to address someone's art, but that's, I knew someone was going to call it that, and I figured I'd have to beat them to the punch. And it makes it ironic then. At the same time, that it's, you know, is it a vanity project? Well, it's pretty revealing, and is that vain to possibly make yourself look bad too? But what do we make music for? What do we do? Like, why are we making it on a music for an audience? It's not out of altruism. Sometimes it is out of there's some element of vanity in there to actually make us stand up in front of an audience and sing.
But it was freeing to a certain degree. I kind of hear that.
Yeah, totally freeing. Especially just finally releasing it was a huge burden lifted off my shoulders. Absolutely.
How many years in the making?
About 5 years. We started in 99. Not really thinking we were making an album then. We were still working on what were demos. And a couple of those songs lasted through the process. But 2002 was when we did the bulk of the recording. And then I sat on it for a year. Actually a couple of years. Because then Bare Naked Ladies made Everything to Everyone and toured. And we had a lot of stuff on the go. And I was nervous about putting this record out, too. It wasn't fully finished, and I wasn't sure if I had the time. And was building a studio at my farm, so it wasn't kind of like, I didn't really have a place. Everything was kind of in between. I didn't have a place to finish it. I'd given it to enough friends who just said, you have to put this out. So last year, I finally got it mixed and finished off.
Well, it came out very, very well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So you've got this whole effort. You're obviously in the music career, but you also seem to be pretty prolific when it comes to online activities. In reading the BNL blog, it seems like you are probably, well, I think Jim is another one of the more common people who post to it. Is that because you have to, or you feel like you have to? You owe that to the fans, or is it just a deeply seated need to connect in another way other than your music?
Well, first of all, I don't know what the hell happened to the other guys. It's like, it's funny. Tyler's the guy who, he's always checking the, you know, the different forums and stuff to see what fans are saying about us. And you know, I always get so mad at, cause, like, you know, that's their own little place to discuss that. And sometimes they're just making shit up. And, you know, you can't take it too seriously and you can't read it. Because I remember this is my first part. I just remember when Stunt came out checking in one of the bulletin boards somewhere. And instantly people were saying, this is terrible. I can't stand this album. This is like the worst album. And the disappointment from that group of fans. Because for them, whatever your first album is that you fall in love with, nothing stands up to that. So for everybody, it's Noel Gordon. Yeah. And I thought, you know what? I worked so hard on this, and I'm so proud of this, and I'm so excited that it just took all the wind out of my sails. Even though it did great, you know, entered the charts at number 3, and it was our biggest thing ever. I felt so deflated by it. I thought, I don't need to read that. It's not really for me anyways. And you know, none of those people would actually say that to my face. But to say to each other, it's fine. But I do feel like the internet is an amazing place for connections between people who wouldn't normally connect. And you know, it's interesting seeing how the blogosphere is kind of, I hate that word. I want to say the world.
Why do you hate that word?
It sounds like spin. It sounds like marketing speak. It doesn't sound real. I mean, blog makes sense to me. I would say the blog world is what I would rather say. The blog world to me is you know, it's interesting to see how it's been taken over by journalists, and some of them are great. I read a lot of the Canadian journalist blogs, and it's nice to see them write more candidly than they do in the magazines and newspapers they normally write for. But again, there's that competition between, you know, the so-called legit writers and the ordinary people. And I'm somewhere in the middle, right? You know, some people see me as an authority on things for no reason at all, because I'm not an authority on anything any more than anybody else is, except for maybe music.
It's almost like the song Celebrity.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. And people look to Celebrity for it. But I also, you know, I am a writer. I write songs and I'm a communicator or whatever for a living, and I enjoy that. I like having a discourse with people, too.
You're not afraid to let your political beliefs fly in the blog. How well is that taken by fans?
Oh, you know what? You can see there I always put the most negative responses and try and respond to them. People hate it, but I always find it amazing that for some reason my industry is not supposed – we're supposed to shut up. But other industries like the pharmaceutical industry or the financial industry are expected to make their political pronouncements, and they're respected for that. We're all part of the same economy. If you want to believe that the economy is what actually makes a nation or a culture itself, which I disagree with, but if you want to actually speak in those conservative terms, we're just another sector. The entertainment sector is another sector, and we should be able to have a voice the same way everybody else does.
Recently, you had sent out an email to a few people and then had posted that email to the blog about possibly doing a project or some sort online, accessing the content that Bare Naked Ladies creates. Is that an actual project, or can you talk about that? Is that like early alpha?
It is early alpha, but I'll tell you, give you a little bit of what we're trying to do. We're not actually going to be selling, you know, content, but what we want to do is create a framework for the shape of a virtual box set. So if you owned, let's say, Gordon and a live bootleg, not even necessarily one we own, when you load it into the program, it would recognize those things instantly. And for, you know, over time, we could actually expand the content, you know, whether it's expanded liner notes or pictures or our comments on songs or some bonus songs or video footage. Like, you know, for instance, if you put Gordon in there and I find, oh, I've got a whole book of photos from the Gordon session, well, I can just upload them and start adding content to those records. So it's just kind of a reward for already owning those records.
It's interesting. Would the fans, or would you expect the fans to kind of drive that forward, or would that be something handled by the record company or I guess the group?
Yeah, it would be the group would be spearheading it at the beginning with our legit releases, but then there would be lots of space as this unfolds for sharing of stuff, for fans to share. And eventually I'd like it to be something that's more fan-run.
And I can assume, and hopefully correctly, that you know what podcasting is?
I do indeed. I'm supposed to be doing that with these in-stores. I just haven't – well, I've been recording them all, and I was just going to put them up as, you know, little MP3s for people to grab as we've been doing, but I haven't had the time to actually upload them yet. So I've got them all, and eventually in the next few days, hopefully, I'll start putting them up one by one.
That's good to know. Have you thought about doing, like, kind of what we're doing here backstage, maybe just setting a microphone or a recorder on the table of kind of behind the scenes of what happens between you and Steven or you and whoever, just hearing those conversations as a fly on the wall and putting those online in terms of a podcast other than the music that you do?
Maybe, but I think some of that stuff then ends up becoming kind of edit intensive. And I don't really have the time to do that. I have a bunch of video footage from when we recorded this, and I started to try and put it together, and I realized it's so much work and time to try and make a decent little package out of that that's not incredibly boring. And then as far as just a podcast as a supplement to the blog, I think that would probably stop me from doing any more writing, and I like being able to do the writing because I think I didn't be doing either or all the time. So I've thought about it. I'm not exactly sure how to go about it, and I thought that at least this way, with being able to give shows as a some kind of podcast, might be, you know, the way for me to contribute to the culture without having to be a pundit or another talker.
So you're quite progressive in terms of, or it seems you're progressive in letting the fans have the music, share the music. You're talking bootlegs, and you're not shying away from that word. You're not cringing. Is that a personal belief that what you create can be shared by the people who love it so much that they're going to buy 15 albums and give it to 14 of their friends.
Well, you know, obviously I'd love people to buy the record. You know, I make them and you know, between myself and the label and everybody else, we're trying to not only make money on it, but actually make our money back first. And, you know, it is what allows me to get out on the road and do that, you know, do these concerts, is the fact that I actually can make a living from this. But that said, I think that the music industry's totally gone about it the wrong way. You can't say, I'm going to, you know, I'll see you in court, then I'll see you at Madison Square Garden. Like, it's one or the other. And, you know, I just saw there was a British study saying that of people using file sharing services, legal and illegal, the people who use the illegal file sharing services spend far more money per capita on music than the people who use legal ones. So, you know, they're music fans. Those people who are out there doing that, most of them, they love music, and they're sharing it, and they're introducing music to each other. I'm not so down on sharing anymore. I think it is the future, and I think the P2P is the future of music distribution. And it doesn't have to be just co-opted by the labels. I think the labels, in a lot of ways, the major labels, it's an antiquated construct that's going away, and I think it's backward thinking for artists to think that they have to fight people all the time.
So you're pushing that envelope, just nudging it forward.
You know, if you'd asked me 2 years ago, I would have said stealing is bad. You know, that was the line. But remember, a couple of years ago, when the decision came down in Canada to not have the ISPs have to give subscribers' names. And I was at the Juno Awards in Edmonton at the time, and people were freaking out, and labels were freaking out. And I thought, you know what? I don't care about the labels. All that said, I mean, Mark's helping me out, and they do help out. But that's a different structure. The structure we have of our deals ends up being in a place where everybody can share in the success. But to be paid royalties ad infinitum on something that is potentially recouped doesn't make any sense. That it's usually in the worst way, and the industry has gotten away with it for far too long. And maybe making records isn't the future anymore. Maybe there are other ways of, you know, to use marketing speak, to monetize music. And, you know, people will find ways to make a living out of making music, and labels or the industry will find a way of marketing it. You know, they can do marketing and retail sales and online sales and promotion and stuff and publicity that I can't do. I mean, as an artist, I can't do it. But the kind of the rampant collecting of copyrights, which is what the labels are busy trying to do right now, I think is antiquated. I think it's going to bite them in the ass, because eventually they're going to find they have vaults full of valueless copyrights.
Well, I'll wrap it up because you're probably getting tired and hungry. Last question. In playing smaller venues and larger venues, which one do you enjoy more?
They're different. I love the large venues. I like the space to run around. I love the energy of the crowd. You can't take either of them for granted. And I think sometimes with a large crowd, it's easy to take them for granted. Where a small crowd, like, you're getting a sense of their attention, or whether they're into it or not right away. Large crowd, it's pretty easy to think everybody loves it, whether or not they do. So I like the challenge of really feeling them turn into your allies in that. But the small thing is great, because I like having the actual interaction with people too.
Well, speaking as a fan both of Stephen Page and Bare Naked Ladies, I appreciate everything that you do online and offline, and I certainly appreciate Greg and Mark and Flagship for allowing you to do this.
Yeah, they've been great. You know, this is it's an uphill climb for us just selling this record, and you know, these guys are willing to take all kinds of chances, and adventurous and dedicated, and you know, and I think that's what makes music exciting, is when people are excited about music.
If I can help sell at least one album, I will have done my part.
Well, I think you've already done it. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen.
The Windows Media stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.